Just as I am without one plea.
Good morning from your friends and neighbors at the Rock Creek Church of Christ in Ottawa, Kansas. The Rock Creek Church of Christ is glad to share this program with you. We hope it will help you as you seek to know God and what His will is for your life. On our last program, we left off in James chapter 3. We've been talking about the tongue, talking about our speech, and how we need to learn self-discipline and self-control, because the tongue carries with it the potential of inflicting great harm on other people. James talks about how a spiritually mature person can be known by their ability to control their speech. I know of people who have been very good at this, who have been men and women of very few words. And it seems to me they have demonstrated a great level of spiritual maturity. James has emphasized this point by talking about how a small thing directs a large thing. And in this comparison, all he's helping us to realize is this very small piece of our body, this little piece of flesh that resides inside of our mouth that helps us to articulate and express words that oftentimes are a reflection of our heart, are a reflection of where our mind is at. That little thing can direct our entire life, whether it be toward the good or toward the evil. Mankind has demonstrated a real capacity to bring the animal kingdom around under our dominion. You can train a dog, you can train a horse, you can, to a certain extent, even train a cow. I mean, my cows know when it's milking time. They come right in, no problem. You can tame a lot of animals. But James says, no man can tame the tongue. So even if we arrive at the point where we have learned self-discipline and self-control, even at that moment, we can still trip up. We can still commit an error in what we say. In verse number 9, he urges us to think about other people. He says, with it, with our tongue, we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Now in the previous verse, he calls the tongue a deadly poison. And the reason it's poisonous is because it poisons other people. Perhaps you've experienced or you've seen it, how an unguarded word in an unguarded moment has caused huge problems. It's like poison getting into the bloodstream, and it can rot out an entire group of people. And James brings up the contradiction that's inherent in all this. With the tongue, we bless God and we curse men. That same tongue is used for both blessing and cursing. What I like about verse number 9 is he tells us why we need to respect other people. He says, men and women have been made in the similitude of God, or if you will, in the image of God. A person's value is not determined by their intelligence or by their talents. A person's value is determined by their creation in the image of God. That every human life has value because we are all children of our Creator. So to use my tongue to curse a fellow human being in one breath and in the next breath blessing God, this demonstrates real hypocrisy, a real contradiction. As he says in verse 10, out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Absolutely. This is the epitome of hypocrisy. How can I speak dishonorably about my fellow human being while at the same time claiming that I'm a follower of Jesus Christ? In verse 11, to prove his point, James brings up a couple of examples. He says, does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. You can't get good and bad water out of the same spring. You can't get two different kinds of fruit off of the same tree. All we need to do is look at nature and see that blessing and cursing should not come out of the same opening in our body. How can we bless God and curse man? And to do so makes us a hypocrite. In verse 13, he asks, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom." This is an interesting switch. He's wrapped up talking about the tongue to a certain extent. He's going to touch on a couple of things that relate to this, but he's also building on some of the things he talked about in earlier chapters. Chapter number 2, for instance, he talks about the need for good works. If you have faith in God, then you need to have good works that go right alongside that faith. And that's certainly a part of verse 13. 13 to me is kind of a challenge. Who is wise and understanding among you? Or in other words, do you consider yourself to be a wise and understanding person? If so, show by good conduct that your works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Do you consider yourself a wise and understanding person? Do you demonstrate your conduct in good works that are done in the meekness of wisdom? Jesus, in Matthew chapter 6, talks about how we should perform our charitable deeds. He says, "Do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Most assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly." What Jesus is talking about is the meekness of wisdom. Meekness is not weakness. Meekness is merely the ability to control oneself and the desire not to do things for glorification or recognition, but rather do things for the sake of what is right. If you consider yourself a wise and understanding person, then the good things you do, the good deeds you perform, need to be done in the meekness of wisdom. In verse 14, he says, "But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth." Those hypocrites that Jesus talks about in Matthew 6, they were self-seeking. They wanted to draw attention to themselves. They wanted to receive the praise and honor of men. That's why they did the good deed. James says you just can't be a Christian and do good things for your own benefit. And if you do so, you're just lying to yourself. You might think back to chapter number 1. He talks about self-deception. "Do not be deceived, my brethren. Do not be deceived, my brethren. Do not be deceived, my brethren." He says 3 times. Verse 14, if you do these things out of envy, out of self-seeking, don't lie to yourself. You're not really being a Christian. He says this wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. Wisdom that is rooted in envy, in self-seeking, does not come from God. That's the wisdom of the world. And what you find when self-seeking and envy are present is division, strife, confusion. It's no wonder that you look at some churches that are in the midst of internal troubles and you see confusion and division. Why? Because somewhere in that congregation, there are people who are doing things not out of what's in the best interests of the group, but out of envy, out of self-seeking. He goes on to say in verse 17, "But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." If you have been given wisdom from above, and remember James talks about asking for wisdom back in chapter number 1, and to ask without doubting in your heart. And the way you know that you are exercising that wisdom is by looking at the fruit that it bears. Is it pure? Is it peaceable? Is it gentle? Is it willing to yield? That's what characterizes the wisdom that is from above. Underneath the surface, there is a spirit that I think James is articulating. This willingness to get along, to not have it done your way all the time, recognizing that your way is not the best way and that others have ideas that need to be shared. Now, certainly I believe that there is a right way and a wrong way. But then there are matters of judgment, matters that can be discussed, compromises that can be made. And those who have wisdom that's from God seek peace, pursue peace. They're willing to yield. They're not partial in their judgments. They don't show favoritism and they're not hypocritical. This is the sort of wisdom that we, as the people of God, need to possess and need to show in our everyday life.
As we draw this week's lesson to a close, your neighbors at the Rock Creek Church of Christ want you to know that God commands everyone to repent. We all desire to do wrong things, and we all succumb to temptation from time to time. But God does not want us to continue living in sin. Instead, He wants us to leave those sinful habits behind. And so He commands us to repent, to turn away from sin, and to turn toward righteousness. If you know you need to live better, but you need help changing your life, please visit us at the Rock Creek Church of Christ in Ottawa, Kansas. Our church building sits 2 miles south of Walmart on Highway 59. We meet at 10 a.m. on Sundays for a Bible study, 11 a.m. for worship, and then again at 1:45 p.m. for a Bible study. We also meet on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Please join us as we worship God, encourage one another, and learn more about God's will for our lives.